The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Ravens, all in as far as 2024?
Well, I'd like to think, Jay, we're always all in. You know, in this business, if you're not all in, then you're all out as far as I'm concerned. So we're going to be in every single year. And that's what John expects. That's what I expect. That's what Steve expects. And I think that's what our fans expect. So I think, you know, you should expect that too, Jerry.
Ravens GM Eric DaCosta making it clear that the phrase of the year, all in.
All in, baby.
Ravens. And that wasn't Jerry Jones he was talking to, although it would stand to reason that Jerry Jones would be looking for some advice on what it means to actually go all in. He's heard the term. He's used the term. He apparently doesn't have the instruction booklet on what all in means, because it apparently means don't do a damn thing. Just sit and wait for the world to unfold around you, and maybe an answer will reveal itself. That's not the way to build a championship team. But Chris, as we talked about yesterday, their foot dragging with their young star players is really the core of the problem. And some people don't like it when we say that, which makes me think we're probably on to something when we say that.
Do you think Jerry realized like the can of worms he was going to open up like with the all in comment, and how it was going to become a living, breathing thing this offseason? I mean, it's kind of amazing. I feel like, you know, even that question there, yeah, it's all off of this Jerry Jones saying they're all in. They're not obviously all in as far as free agency is concerned. I don't know what their example of all in is, but it isn't the same example all of us have. That's for sure. But, you know, yeah, you said it, right? I mean, it's paying guys a little too much money, not getting out in front of contracts, you know, maybe not developing players the way that they should. Either way, they're in a tough spot. We know that. And it doesn't look like they're all in. The Ravens, on the other hand, I you know, again, not a huge free agency, but I'll give them credit. They are a team for most parts. I know they're emotionally all in every year, but for most years, they're usually a team that goes for it. And I got to give them credit in that department for sure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Look, when you push yourself that hard to try to win every year, you do set yourself up for maximum disappointment. But that's how we would like to see every team operate. I've said time and again, they'll say they want to win the Super Bowl every year, but they have to say that so you will open your wallet every year, so you will watch the games every year, so you will buy all that overpriced food and other stuff every week of every year. That's why they do it. They can't come out and say, well, you know, don't tell anybody, but this is a business, and if we just base it on how much money we're making, we kind of win the Super Bowl every year. But we have to say we want to win the actual Super Bowl so you'll keep giving us the other Super Bowl victories, the bank vault Super Bowl victories. So we'll say we want to win it every year because, you know, that's the only way to keep making all your money. And some teams, I think, you know, they'd never admit that, but they operate that way. It's hollow talk. I think with the Ravens, it's not, which tells me that there's a lot of torment in that organization, because it's now been 12 years since their last Super Bowl win.
Yeah.
And they've had an elite team in recent years, but they can't get back.
Right, right. Yeah, no, I can't, you know, can't get back. Of course, have to deal with the AFC that we've talked about that is arguably as good as we've ever seen it, ever, right? I mean, we're seeing a guy at a quarterback at a team in Kansas City that's as special as ever. So that's hurt them for sure, but they're on the right track. We know that, you know, and they are all in. And, hey, you know, them, like Cleveland, like Kansas City, right, is something that I think you'd be proud of. They're showing that, oh, wait, we can still be all in and pay the quarterback top of the market tier, like, type of money, right? Because I get a little sick of all that, a little like, oh, you can't have a team without whether you have to pay the quarterback all that. You know, I always think of you because you've always been like, hey, it's not the quarterback's job to worry about the bank account or the salary cap. And we're seeing teams start to adjust to all that stuff. Look at the Cleveland Browns with Deshaun Watson, and the team's talented as hell. You know, the Eagles, yeah, I know it's not top tier of the market there, but it's a top 10 contract that hurts. It's an all-star team. So, you know, yeah, you got to find ways to get it done, even with star players, big quarterback contracts, back to the Dallas Cowboy conversation and all that there.
The original all-in comments from Jerry Jones, I think, happened at the Senior Bowl. And we've had the clip in the past, and he says it like over and over again, almost as if maybe if I say it enough, it'll be like I never said it. Like he realized in the moment, I don't know what I've just done, so I'm just going to keep saying all in over and over and over again. But the Ravens at the opposite at the same time, and it started to come out as something that was neither. At the opposite end of that spectrum are the Baltimore Ravens. And yeah, you can take comfort in the reality that if you're a Ravens fan, they're at least trying.
Yes.
They aren't succeeding, right. But they really are trying to get to the Super Bowl every year.
Yeah, they got a culture that expects that. And I think that's, you know, what Harbaugh's built. It's Steve Bisciotti, right? The owner. He's obviously instilled that.
Bisciotti.
Excuse me. I know.
Bisciotti.
Ozzie Smith, right? What he kind of indoctrinated into the front office and all that. They're one of the best run organizations in football. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, no splash signings this year, maybe, right? Because, hey, they're really good. People want to pillage their players. But the fact that they bring back Justin Madubuike and then get Derrick Henry in free agency and, hey, Nelson Aguilar still, you know, get him there. They do the right things to kind of balance out their team, and that's where the Ravens are, you know, top-notch, and we expect them to be in the conversation once again.
Isn't it sad that Nelson Aguilar's NFL legacy will be every time his name comes up, people think of the guy who was talking
about dropping babies.
Every time his name comes up, I think of that guy.
Yeah.
Talking about,
in Philadelphia.
Not like Aguilar. They dropped it. He didn't drop the baby, unlike Aguilar.
Yeah.
That just shows you how much the fans love their teams in every NFL city. And hell, it's why we have jobs, because the fans love their teams. Oh, but by the way, I'm not going to read the emails, but remember our Cowboys fan Vince
who used to
send in
real-time
emails? I woke up this morning to a couple of really hostile, like over the top, like I can't even read them, emails from Vince.
Damn.
Who's upset because of what we were doing yesterday to potentially stir up trouble for the Cowboys.
Right.
It's like, dude, I mean, they're stirring up the trouble. We're just pointing out, well, they got some trouble over there. So it just shows you how passionate fans are. And look, what he said was highly inappropriate, and I should be mad about it. And it was almost on the line where I should send it to NBC security. That's how hateful and vile and over the top it is. But I understand that's the reaction that gets provoked by folks who really love their teams and they don't know how to channel it. And sometimes they pop off with some hateful rhetoric. And I'd rather they have a platform to do that than, you know, show up at my house and be advised. I have many, many firearms that are fully loaded, locked, cocked, and ready to rock at all times. So don't push your luck. And I got cameras everywhere. You ain't going to get very far. But regardless of that public service announcement, it's an example of just how much people have invested in this. And it's every year, every year, every year, we think this could be the year for every team. Every team like the Texans that dramatically turns it around, creates this just wistful idea that our team can do it too. Our team can do it too. And the Ravens are the living example of actually trying to take what they did last year, take a step back, address where they need to get better, address what they did wrong in 2024
right.
or 23
right.
and apply those lessons and try to get, you know, one step farther. And the reality is, you know, to the point we were talking about around the Super Bowl, Chris, the Ravens, John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson, they may just be the Karl Malone, you know, the guys that had to play
yeah,
second
right,
fiddle
right.
to Patrick Mahomes. And look at where the Ravens have been caught between Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. It's kind of amazing the Ravens found a way to win one during the combined Brady-Mahomes dominance of the AFC. But that's one of the big reasons why the Ravens haven't been able to cash in on this desire to go all in and win it every year. They haven't had a Tom Brady. They haven't had a Patrick Mahomes. They're hoping they can make their Lamar Jackson into a guy who can be as successful as those two have been.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting conversation. You're right. I mean, and you know, even when they were good there in the 2000s, right? I mean, they were good, yeah. But damn, it wasn't only just Tom Brady. You know, it was Peyton Manning, right? Had a deal with him too. Oh, damn, in our division, we had an all-time great. We had to play twice a year, and Ben Roethlisberger, who went to the Super Bowl three times. So they've been extremely relevant. They've been beyond relevant. They knock at the door every year. They have an institution that is in place there as far as scouting players, finding players that fit the Raven mold that is, like, extremely respectable. And we see people come out of the front office there and replicate a lot of the things that, you know, they have instilled in those people. There's a, you know, a tried and true formula to what the Ravens believe in. And, you know, it's old school. And I think that's why we like it, why it works. And it's still the Ravens where they're a little bit like, nah, you know, we know, like, hey, we like X's and O's, but we're still going to make it about, like, when we get on the field, we're the biggest, baddest dudes, and we're going to kick your ass, and we're just going to be more physical than you and intimidate you. And they haven't lost that through the last 20 years, or really ever since Ray Lewis got drafted there. It's been instilled, and it hasn't changed since then.
Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden in the same round of the same draft.
Insane.
Their first year in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Right after they left.
Same.
Cleveland.
Home run.
Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis in the same round of the same
right.
damn
like upper draft. Room of the Hall of Fame in the same round, and you got them on the same team. That's insane. It is insane.
John Harbaugh and Eric DaCosta had their pre-draft press conference yesterday, and one of the things that Harbaugh said to this point of what they're trying to do to get better, Lamar Jackson is involved in reviewing film of the receivers that they're considering in the draft. And that can be a two-edged sword. You could have Lamar decide he likes a guy that Eric DaCosta doesn't like, and they've got to take time to explain to Lamar why that guy doesn't fit what they're trying to do.
Sure.
It reminds me of what Patrick Mahomes did last year, working out with guys like Rashee Rice before the draft. Take it a step farther. Take it beyond reviewing film. Let's go see how this guy and I click on a practice field. That's something Lamar Jackson would be allowed to do.
Yeah.
If he wanted to do it.
Meet me
own,
in South Florida. I'll see you there.
Yeah,
right.
Beyond the confines of the team itself. You don't bring him to the team facility and do it, but you take Lamar Jackson and him and you get him together somewhere if Lamar Jackson wants to do it. But, you know, I'm a firm believer. If you want your quarterback to be basically the coach on the field, you need to find a way to let him give input, and you need to find a way to respectfully disagree with the input he's given.
Yeah,
you don't want to just
right.
throw him the keys to the car and say, we're going to do whatever you want us to do. We want your input. Here's why we're doing something that meshes
yeah.
with your input, and here's
right.
why we're doing something that doesn't.
That's right. Constructive, you know, conversations. First off, that's what goes on, right? I mean, it's, you know, hey, listen, I'm sure there's going to be a player that John Harbaugh is going to go, wait, I like this player. And then DaCosta and them are going to go, well, hey, this off-the-field stuff, or hey, we didn't like this little area about the way he played. Let's sit down and watch it. And then you start to go, oh, yeah, I see what you're seeing. I know what you're saying here. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, again, those are tough, healthy conversations in the football world that need to be had. And, yeah, it's cool that Lamar Jackson is doing this and taking a little bit more of a hands-on approach. You know, that's the benefit of signing up your guy long-term, having him there, you know, all of that. And then, yeah, it's the Mahomes factor. Brady raised it to a level – And, you know, Brady and Manning brought it to one level. Now Mahomes is like, wait, I'm going to try to match that mentality, and now I'm going to one-up it with my training and how I'm involved with my team all year long. And now that's becoming a new thing in the NFL, too, with these quarterbacks as well. Okay, if Mahomes is doing it, then, damn, maybe I'll start to watch film, too, and be involved in this a little bit as well if I'm a franchise quarterback. And I think that's the effect he's having on the league right now.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
One last thing on the Cowboys,
yeah.
And it's going to transition to the next thing we'll talk about with the Ravens.
I was going to say, damn, bam, you just taking a left turn back to Vinny and Jerry over here.
I want to mention this because I think it's kind of comical,
yeah.
And it's so obvious,
right.
What the Cowboys were trying to do. Yesterday, we opened the show by talking about C.D. Lamb reportedly staying away from the voluntary offseason program and possibly skipping the mandatory minicamp as he tries to get the contract that he has earned, that he's already waited a full year for and may have to wait another year, and who knows, maybe another year if they franchise tag him and they don't extend him under one franchise tag like they did with Dak Prescott. So after that news came out, there was one of those TMZ roving reporters somewhere, and C.D. Lamb was there. And, you know, very basic questions. We have it. Oh, we have it. I guess it may have been planned. We do have the thought of C.D. Lamb. Oh, must have been later in the show and somebody didn't look at the outline as closely as he should have.
Shocker.
And it wasn't Chris.
Shocker.
What a surprise. I look at it again, and eventually it registers. Let's do this here then, because I think this is very interesting on how this went down. Here's C.D. Lamb from later in the day when the news broke about his potential offseason holdout. Here he is being asked some hard-hitting questions by the TMZ roving reporter.
Appreciate you. Will you be in Dallas?
Yeah, I'll be in Dallas.
Okay, well, that was just the end of it, but the whole thing was the same idea. I'll be in Dallas. And it was never, are you staying away from offseason programs? It's just like, hey, everything fine? You staying in Dallas? Yeah, I'm staying in Dallas. You're going to be on the team? Yeah, I'm on the team. That's completely different from whether or not he's going to stay away from the offseason program, try to leverage himself a contract sooner than later. Completely different. Has nothing to do with whether or not he's going to stay away from the offseason program. You're still on the team. You're just not showing up for the offseason program because your only leverage is to withhold services. It's two completely different concepts. But the Cowboys seized on that and posted an item on their team website, torturing the logic, ignoring that it's two completely different concepts, and trying to bootstrap together, I'll be in Dallas with, well, he must not be unhappy with his contract. Bullshit! I mean, he's not going to stay away from offseason workouts if he's happy with his contract. And he's not going to say publicly, I'm not going to be in Dallas. He still wants to be on the team. The whole idea is he wants his contract. He wants to be on the team. And if you're not going to give it to him through the normal course of business, he's got to use the levers available to him to try to make it happen. But the Cowboys are trying to make this connection and act like everything is fine, instead of just fixing the damn problem and getting the guy paid before the price goes up when Justin Jefferson gets his deal and Ja'Marr Chase gets his.
Yeah, well, it just kind of seems in their playbook, like the they try to do the increase the public pressure while we're in the early, you know, part of negotiation or whatever. I feel like we saw this with Ezekiel Elliott. We saw it with Dak Prescott, right? It's just this public push to kind of put the player in a corner, but I don't know if it really does any good. And like you said, obviously, right, like there's two different things, and that it is a thing altogether. The guy is there at the damn supermarket following him there. He's not following him there for, oh, wait, you had a great year, you're CeeDee Lamb, let me do that. I mean, this is a topic right now. What's going to happen with the Cowboys and CeeDee Lamb? What are they going to pay him, right? Can they afford to do it? And Micah Parsons and Dak Prescott, and you're the Cowboys and you're the traveling road show and you do a training camp, you know, in California, and you do any other public appearance you want. And then when it becomes to, ooh, publicity that we don't necessarily like or is hard or might make life harder on us, they're like, whoa, whoa, wait, hold on. We don't like all that publicity. And that's where, you know, hey, the rubber meets the road, and we're like, eh, bullcrap. It's time to pay CeeDee Lamb.
A quick review of the remaining outline of the show tells me that unless they made rapid edits to the outline, I did not fail to notice that it was there later. This is just a case of them being ready to go. So credit to the control room for being ready to go. Courtney was ready to go. She saw the article, and she grabbed the shot. So I was and still am fully aware of what's coming up in the show. Just don't quiz me on what's coming up in the show. The other side of this, too, what else did we talk about yesterday? We talked about the flagship radio station stirring up this idea that Micah Parsons' act is wearing thin on the Cowboys. Where's the article on the Cowboys website saying that that's a load of crap? Where's the article saying the flagship radio station doesn't speak for us? Where's the repudiation of the thing that was said on this platform where Jerry Jones appears twice per week during the season? If you see, there's two issues here. Either they planted that concept deliberately and stepped back and waited for it to blow, or they had no idea it was going to happen, but they recognized we got a relationship with this group. We better make sure that Micah and the world knows they're not speaking for us here. And so if you're going to grab that quote from CeeDee Lamb and completely warp it and bastardize it and twist it out of context to support your agenda, you better clarify this other thing too that's out there that people think is real because it came from the Cowboys flagship radio station. So you're right, Chris. They know exactly what they're doing. And it's all premised on delay, delay, and delay. And that was our point yesterday. Have you not learned? And this is a broad comment for any NFL team. Have you not learned that waiting is never going to solve your problem? It's only going to make it worse. Ask the Vikings when it comes to Justin Jefferson. Ask any of these teams. The longer you wait, the more it's going to cost you to sign the guy. I can't believe they keep doing it, but that's exactly, in my opinion, what the Cowboys are doing with their top players.
Yeah, no, it certainly seems that way, Mike. I mean, yeah, buying time, trying to figure it out. I don't know exactly what the master plan is, right? But yeah, it's inevitable. And, you know, I'm with you in, you know, the fact of get out in front of it, certainly, sure, right? I know that the CeeDee Lamb thing, I think, is a little complicated. I do, right? For we don't know what he's asking for, right? Where is that market? Where's that line of demarcation that we talked about to where, wait, you've crossed over into these are the special receivers in football and you're not that? Or, you know, is it asking for too much money altogether, right? That's a tough one. But you knew this was coming. And then, of course, Micah Parsons is, hey, like we said yesterday, it's inevitable as well. He's the best, arguably the best defensive player in football. You drafted him. He's awesome. He's the most game-changing player on your football team, right? I mean, yeah, you got to think that they were ready for this or thinking about it or having a plan, go, wait, let's get it out in front and get the checkbook balanced or whatever else. But you know, I don't know. As it sits right now, it seems like they're kind of figuring it out as we go here.
This is one of the realities of when the people who count the beans are also in charge of the roster. you know, did they try to maybe limit CeeDee Lamb's production last year so he wouldn't
definitely
be in
not. No, they did the opposite. That's what's hilarious. They did the opposite. Yeah. They had nobody else. Right. That they literally cornered themselves and they were like, wait, in a contract year, we have nobody else and we're going to just feed him all the time. And they've made it worse on themselves. And again, I think that's what's, you know, now people look at CeeDee Lamb and go, oh, wait, he's in the class of like those guys we talked about yesterday. And that's where I bet you there's an issue, because I don't think anybody in the NFL thinks CeeDee Lamb is in the class of the guys of Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, Justin Jefferson, or Ja'Marr Chase. But after that year, him and his agent are probably going, hey, look, we're right up there with those guys. And Dallas is probably like, wait, it's 1 year of, you know, extraordinary play, right? And a lot of it was we just focused the whole offense around you, too. So that's where I could see there being issues as we go forward here with you know, tinkering with the final bottom line.
I have this vague flash of a neuron in my brain that tells me at some point during CeeDee Lamb's career, that was a question that was raised as to whether or not they were deliberately holding him back from a production standpoint because they didn't want to pay him. And I remember at one point last season was we were trying to figure out what the hell was going on in Pittsburgh, and I'm a big believer in George Pickens. I think you are too. I threw out the idea that maybe they're not showcasing him and developing him and getting him involved in the offense because they don't want to create a financial monster and have this guy that's going to want $30 million a year.
Yeah.
If he's having this great production and he's coming into the spot where he's eligible for a new contract. But regardless, those are part of the issues. Well, and when you have the people who are in charge of the money making those decisions, that's you kind of need a firewall there. You need to do what's right for the team and let the money people worry about that later. You can't have the money people influencing in real time what's happening with the team because they're worried about what it's going to cost them later.
Yeah, well, yeah, all of that, right? And then, you know, they're kind of in a spot here right now as far as how they've, you know, kind of formulated and put their team together of where they've, you know, backed themselves into a corner even more from that sense. And you know, just the fact of, hey, again, you know, the defense got, you know, it's got some good corners. And then, okay, it's got DeMarcus Lawrence, who's getting up there in age, but still a real good player. And then it's got the freak of nature. And it's all about him. And that's when anybody you talk to that plays the Dallas Cowboys, it's like, wait, block 11, we got to worry about 11, we got to worry about 11. And on the offensive side of the ball, now with, you know, Tony Pollard gone, there's nobody on offense that defenses are like, oh, no, we're scared about, or, ooh, right? CeeDee Lamb's the only guy. Brandon Cooks, the same thing. You know, good player, but getting up there in years, the years of him, you know, taking over a game and doing all that, I don't think we're going to see that very much anymore. So they now put themselves into, wait, we lost a good running back, CeeDee Lamb's disgruntled, and we really don't have another proven commodity on the offense right now that we can, like, take over the game and be that guy. And I think that's where they're in trouble, too. And that's where it's going to be interesting to see how they work all this out.
One of the realities of the contractual messes they've created for themselves, they're not able to go out and go all in financially when there's a free agent available. That leads us to the clearest link so far today between the all-in Cowboys and the truly all-in Ravens. Derrick Henry, one of the great running backs in the NFL, finally becomes a free agent, lands in Baltimore. The Cowboys, as he said before, didn't even call. Here he is. From yesterday, I believe this is from the Jim Rome show, Derrick Henry on why he signed with the Ravens, and again, whether or not the Cowboys were ever involved in an effort to lure him to Dallas.
You know, Baltimore was always my number one option. That's always where I wanted to go, and like I said, I know the trade talks, it was almost going to happen, but I didn't know once free agency started if, you know, they still felt the same way until I talked to my agent to see, you know, what was really going on. And I know the Cowboys lost Pollard, so, you know, I didn't know if they were going to be looking for a running back. You know, I live in the offseason. I've been training here, living here for a while. So I just thought it made sense. And, you know, I thought there would be talks, but they never really reached out. And like I said, everything happened for a reason. You know, pray to God that, you know, put me in the place where I'm meant to be. And Baltimore is that spot. I'm happy, and I'm excited for the opportunity. But the Cowboys never reached out. And it's all good at the end of the day. No hard feelings.
you know, Cowboys fans who would prefer to say nothing to see here would say, well, he wanted to go to the Ravens anyway, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, but if the Cowboys get involved, that might change things. You know, we as humans have a way of adapting to our circumstances, whatever they might be.
Sure.
So Derrick Henry is with the Ravens. Well, I always wanted to be with the Ravens. Well, then you go with the Cowboys. Well, I always wanted to be with the Cowboys. I mean, our opinions on where we are and how we got here are influenced by where we are and how we got there. So the fact that he said he was always interested in the Ravens, you know, you could tell there was a little wistfulness in his voice as he's talking about, hey, the Cowboys, you know, Tony Pollard's gone and Zeke's gone and I work out here and why don't you freaking call me?
Yeah.
So there was more than a little bit of that in his voice.
Yeah, I mean, Southern guy, his home base is Dallas. I mean, so he's going, wait, this makes sense. And he's, you know, like we talk about, reading the tea leaves and going, damn, they got no running back, right? They got nobody proven on the roster. You know, that's another area. You look at it and you just go, wait, you know, who's the guy at running back for Dallas this year? I mean, man, right? So, yeah, I mean, I understand him thinking that. I certainly had a thought of that as well. I also can understand Dallas not doing it, right? We're talking about, hey, they're in problems with money as it is anyways. Do they want to throw more money at a older running back, right? That, you know, again, is getting a little banged up here and there, right? So I understand that. I'm not going to be mad at them for that. Right. But I think it just goes into the bigger picture of us being shocked that they're not a little more aggressive and in on some of these conversations, even with some of these guys that are out there that we all feel like can maybe help their team.
You know, they have all these young players who they think they can con into taking less because you're playing for the Cowboys. You're wearing the star. You can make more money elsewhere. This may have been a guy who was prepositioned to accept that. I'll take less to play for the Cowboys.
He might
have. I'm playing for the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I feel like they didn't even want to start down that path because you don't want to get out there that, you know, you made a half-hearted effort or at the end of the day, you weren't able to sign him to a competitive contract because you painted yourself into a corner with Dak Prescott. You're doing it with CeeDee Lamb and you're going to do it eventually with Micah Parsons. Like, it becomes less noticeable that, you know, we've made this mess for ourselves if we don't pursue unsuccessfully Derrick Henry. Better to pursue him not at all than pursue him unsuccessfully, because then they might notice that we have really screwed ourselves up in how we've handled our young star players.
And
I feel like
that.
At some level, even if they don't articulate that, it's kind of like, well, let's not make any sudden moves here because we know we can't close this deal. Yeah, maybe we could do it, but but let's not find out because it's just going to make us look weaker than we'd like to look because of the poor way we've handled our young players.
Yeah, no, I agree there. I think there's a little bit of that, right? Not making it look like we had a public L, a public loss, right? We wanted a guy, we didn't get him, we cheaped out or whatever, and didn't give the extra million or two a year and didn't get him with a marquee name. Yeah, teams balance that conversation, certainly, and how that might be viewed, you know, as far as by the public and the media.
The Ravens, notwithstanding the arrival of Derrick Henry, still might need to add a running back or two in the draft. Gus Edwards is gone. J.K. Dobbins, coming back.
Right.
He's available.
Right.
I think he drew some interest from the Chargers, I believe.
I think they brought him into a visit. Yep.
Yeah. Right. And Dalvin Cook actually finished the year under contract with the Ravens, but that ship feels like it's sailed because he never really had many opportunities there.
Right.
Even with Derrick Henry, here's Eric DaCosta, Ravens GM, from yesterday's pre-draft press conference on the possibility of Baltimore picking a running back.
I think so. I mean, you know, I think it was an interesting dynamic this year in free agency. You saw whatever it was, maybe 9 or 10 guys get signed on the first day of free agency. And I think part of that was probably, you know, how people looked at this running back class in the draft. There's no, like, top-tier first-round necessarily type talents this year. That being said, there's a lot of guys, if you're looking at the prospects in the second, third, and fourth round, there's a lot of those guys, particularly third, fourth, fifth round clumps. So we've looked at those guys very closely. We're excited about some of those players. You know, there's probably a pretty strong chance we will draft a running back at some point, you know, round obviously to be determined. But we do think there's a chance for us to get a good young player who can help us in different ways as a running back in the passing game and also on special teams.
9 total picks the Ravens have, and they draft 30th overall because of their number one seed and AFC championship exit last year. They've got Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, and Keaton Mitchell. Keaton Mitchell was the guy who was like, use this guy some more, and he eventually tore his ACL, but it's like, you know, they kept saying they want to get him the ball more. Every time he touched the ball, he did something great with it, so if he comes back healthy, nice compliment to Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nasty injury, right? It was a Sunday night game. It was the Jaguars, right? It was breaking a run down the right sideline, and the knee went the wrong way. And it was one of those where he had a look. So I just, again, I'm not a doctor, as we all know, but that would be one where I wouldn't be able to, or I wouldn't be thinking, I think he's going to be totally 100% himself to start the year, right? That was a pretty drastic injury that, you know, even John Harbaugh after was like, oh, it's pretty serious, right? If you remember that. They got to do something there. They definitely do. To add to the depth a little bit, protect themselves of Derrick Henry, who, yeah, hasn't had a huge injury history, we know that, but we've seen it here and there over the last few years, and he's getting up there in age, so you want to protect against that. And we know running the football is a big part of what they do there in Baltimore, right? Now, running back, maybe they don't need the star all the time just because they got Lamar Jackson, and that aspect of him running the ball opens up so much, but DaCosta said it right. I mean, we know Keaton Mitchell's the perfect example, right? He was not even drafted last year. There's going to be guys there in the middle of the draft. Overall, though, Mike, the running back class is weak this year. It is not a real strong class. I think right now, if you had asked me, I'd go, I don't think there's going to be a running back drafted in the second round either. It's all going to start third, fourth, fifth round, kind of like DaCosta said, where they're clumped together, and it's just like, hey, wait, do we want a power back? Do we want that jitterbug guy that can break an ankle? What kind of complement do we want to the group we have there? And, yeah, I would expect them to call one of them off the board there somewhere in the mid-rounds.
The other reality, Chris, of taking a running back in mid to late rounds of the draft, that becomes a guy who comes in and fills out key spots on your special team.
That's very true.
You need special teamers.
And very true.
We've got this new kickoff this year. You know, we were talking about the body types that you want to put on that wall of 10. They're going to be lined up at the 40-yard line of the receiving team, 5 to 10 yards away from the offensive player. You know, maybe the ideal body is a running back who can dart through and avoid the blocker and get to the ball carrier. This is all to be determined as part of this grand one-year experiment. But that's another reason to maybe have another running back. Maybe the Ravens are thinking, you know, running back, linebacker may be what we're looking at. Running back, linebacker, big safety, you know, tight end, I don't know. But, you know, it's not going to be offensive and defensive linemen, I don't think, on that wall of 10 that is 5 or 10 yards away from the blockers and 15 yards away, 20 yards away, or 20 to 40 yards away from the guy who catches the ball. They want guys who can get there fast, guys who can shed blocks, and guys who can get to the ball.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I mean, as far as like the, you know, DBs, we expect to see linebackers, maybe outside linebackers like the Ravens, right? They got a guy like Odafe Oweh. Maybe he's a guy that is athletic enough, right, long enough to where maybe they do it. But, yeah, it's changed the game there. And the aspect of, you know, how you're thinking about building your team and what you want to do in that little area, certainly. You know, and yeah, running back is usually a guy, the bottom of the roster type running back plays all the special teams. They need a running back like for all the reasons of above. I mean, everything there. Really, right now, you look at it and just go, they have Justice Hill and Derrick Henry. That's all they got. We don't know where Keaton Mitchell is, and I don't expect him to be, like we said, ready to go early in the year. So they definitely need to add depth and players there. I wouldn't be shocked to see them, you know, draft one and then have a priority free agent, or maybe even draft two, draft one in the mid round, draft one in the seventh round, something like that. I don't think that would shock me either if I saw that out of Baltimore.
Well, and again, it all comes down to the extent to which you need help on special teams and if you're comfortable with Hill or Mitchell on special teams. And I wouldn't be. I'd want those top three guys available for the offense, and I'd want to develop a young running back through these other ways, these other opportunities to get out on the field and play. Football, a dangerous game, leads to a lot of injuries. We talked about Keaton Mitchell's injury. One of the things the NFL has done this year has implemented the hip drop tackle ban, and technically it's the swivel hip drop tackle. You can still do a hip drop tackle, you just can't do a swivel. I just wish they would have done the whole thing and make it easier for everyone. Anyway, here's John Harbaugh, who saw his top tight end go down on a Thursday night this past year because of a hip drop tackle that at one point they said would be legal. Then that said, who the hell knows? Who the hell knows how it's going to play out? But here's Harbaugh on the fact, the mere fact, that the NFL decided to take that weapon out of a defensive player's arsenal.
As far as the hip drop tackle, the challenge of tackling, I don't even understand the question. I mean, the hip drop tackle, when did you ever hear about the hip drop tackle until like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, right? That's because it was discovered probably in rugby and started being executed as a standalone technique. It's a three-part movement. You've got to execute that play. You've got to be close enough to that ball carry to actually get him around the hips, all right? Pull him close to yourself, swing your hips through, and drop on the back of his legs. If you're that close, wrap him up and tackle him and take him to the ground like Ray Lewis used to do and everybody did for 100 years before that. But you're talking about a tackle that the ball carrier has no method of escape from. He can't escape. So when you drop down on the back of his legs, it's a mess, and it's 25 times more likely to have a serious injury. So it's really a bad play, and it needed to be out. And guys are going to tackle just fine without the quote-unquote hip-drop tackle because they tackled just fine without it for 100 years of football before that when you never saw it, really.
He's right, but in those 100 years of football, at least for most of them, you could use your head in ways that you can't now. And I think this is just part of the evolution, and this is one of the consequences of taking the head out of the game. You push people toward other strategies for getting a ball player onto the ground, and this is one, yeah, that's popped up in recent years that I don't know that anybody ever coached it. Players saw it. They started doing it. The league spotted it while trying to figure out why there was an uptick in high ankle sprains. They're like, we got to do something about this. But I think this is just one of the organic byproducts of taking the helmet out of the game. And I agree with what John Harbaugh is saying. It's still going to be hard to spot the difference between, a hip drop tackle without the swivel and with the swivel.
It's not going to be hard. They've confused it. We're going to still see. We're going to know it. We're right on every one we said was a hip drop tackle. We're right. It won't be. We got it. We do. They confused it a little bit.
Why was
Mark
Andrews not? I mean, the Bengals were sure to tell us the day they passed the rule, and we used a photo of the Mark Andrews play, and it was Bengals linebacker Logan Wilson. That the Bengals reached out to us both here and at the league meeting. Shereen Williams heard from him, and I did too. That's not an illegal tackle. It wasn't part of the montage of plays they showed. And then by the next day, the league says, yes, that would be an illegal hip drop tackle.
Yeah,
so, I don't know where the swivel is there. It's all happening so fast. And this gets back to the point that we made a couple of weeks ago. I don't think there's going to be a ton of flags on these. I think we're going to have guys get fined after the fact. I think it's going to be hard for the officials to see all the elements clearly enough to throw the flag. This is going to be guys get fined. But the problem is the possibility of the flag is going to be there in a key moment, and it's just another way that games can end up being officiated inconsistently. That's the big concern I have about this.
Well, yeah. Now, listen, we discussed this. This is one of the tougher ones. This was not one of the most obvious ones out there. I think the obvious ones that we saw last year, right? I think they will get flagged, right? I expect that. You know, I hear you with the head thing. You know, but this is something like John echoed a thing that I was saying during the whole thing. Like, the adjustment's not going to be that hard. This was not nobody tackled like this 7 years ago. It's a copycat league, and it was started by smaller defensive players who started to go, wait, I can't tackle this guy, so I'm just going to hog tie him and break his damn legs, and he'll go down that way, and I won't get a bad grade for a missed tackle. The head doesn't even have anything to do with this one, Mike, just because you're behind and grabbing anyways, right? It's like he said, it never was a thing. In the old days, we wrapped them up and we just fell and, hey, we tackled them. And then, like we heard Devin McCourty explain and other guys explain, we saw one or two guys do it, and all of a sudden we said, hey, let's wrap him up and throw our legs on top of his legs, and it's a guaranteed tackle. I don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah, I'm Devin McCourty. I weigh 198 pounds, but I can take down Derrick Henry at 245 when I do this kind of tackle, right? So that's where I think it became its own thing, and it caught on fire. And like we always say, it's a copycat league. One DB sees it, a linebacker sees it. Ooh, wait, this guy on my team does it. Damn, I'm going to start doing that. Guy goes down every time. And I don't blame them or fault them for that. But Yes, in the basic world of football, this was never a thing until 4 or 5 years ago, and that's where we just got to keep preaching that to the defensive players so they'll adjust and not be angry that it's being taken away.
I just hope that we don't get officiating controversies over obvious hip drop tackles that aren't flagged, and the official says to the reporter after the game, I didn't see all the elements, and they say if we don't see all the elements, don't throw the flag. You know, the opposite of the when in doubt,
I hear you.
For roughing the passer. You know, we want you to see all the elements.
Right.
And I've already gotten the gist of that through the comments of guys like Rich McKay. We want them to see all the elements, so you just don't throw it until that key moment in a playoff game.
Well, that's what's going to piss people off.
You throw
off.
It.
Right.
I saw all the elements.
Right.
Well, why'd you throw it here and why didn't you throw it
exactly
there?
Exactly right.
It introduces another way for the officials to be inconsistent in a way that because we don't have the full transparency like the UFL has.
Yes.
It's going to make people think that things are rigged. So we're going to have to deal with all those complaints while the NFL sits around acting like, well, we don't know anything. Nobody says anything to us. We don't have any sense that people think their fix is in. No, because you're not out on the front lines listening to it all the time. We're on the front lines all the time hearing from these people when they think the fix is in. And this is just another way for the fix to be perceived to be in. That's the risk they're taking.
No, you're right about that. Right.
The safety side of it. I don't like what they're setting up, this possibility of another area for people to say, see, the fix is in.
Yeah, no, listen, it's very real. I'm with you, Mike. You're right. I mean, it's going to piss people off, right? Sorry, Liverpool, when, Kansas City hip drops tackles a guy on the Ravens in the AFC Championship game. It doesn't get called, and now Kansas City drives down, and a Ravens guy does the same tackle, and it does get called. Or does, you know, the opposite of whatever happened before, and people are going to go, what the hell? It was the same tackle. Why did this one get flagged, and my team now had to kick a field goal because of it, and you didn't flag this one, and now the other team is, you know, going to score a touchdown, whatever. Right, so that's where definitely it's a little scary. It brings me back to the whole quarterback, you know, getting hit in the head thing. Right, it goes back to the 2018 AFC Championship game. There was like 5 clips of Mahomes being hit in the head. They didn't call it. Brady got hit in the chest, and it kind of looked like it. And he got hit like this, and they called it on a 3rd and 14 late in the game, where you're like, man, if they don't get the first down here, the game might be over. And they got a free pass because of what you're talking about right there. So I hear you there, and that'll definitely, they've got to be very diligent and careful with this.
You know, the NFL was forced in 2009, 2010 to get serious about player health and safety, and they have. At some point, the NFL is going to be forced to get serious about officiating consistency, accuracy, the investment necessary to improve it. It's all going to come from one of these gambling scandals. It's why we point out the Shohei Ohtani thing, the issue in the NBA a couple of weeks ago. One of these gambling scandals is going to get some legislative or judicial or executive branch up their butts, and they're going to have that same epiphany that they had 15 years ago. As it relates to health and safety, they're going to have it as to gambling. And that's, we're just going to have to wait for it to happen. And then it's going to get better. And then they'll spend the money and the calls will get more consistent. And we'll have fewer of these examples that just drive people absolutely crazy. All right, let's take a break. There was one more thing I was thinking of, though. Damn it. Oh, I know. And this is very important. I'm glad I remembered. The show could not have been complete if I didn't make this observation. You said that word that starts with P and ends with is earlier. I'm told yesterday that when I said it, it was indeed dumped from the Sky Sports Action version of the program, which is still not live, even though the other show about football is off for like, I think, 5 months, and that hole's there. We could be live. I think the reason we're not is because they know. They've had to put the warning on the screen, strong language on this program, that P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E, that neat way of spelling it, you know. So they dumped the P word. Now, if I would have said that other word that they say all the time, that word that we find shocking and repugnant, and they just throw it around all the time, they probably would have dumped that. But I prefer not to be, you know, dumped from NBC, so I'm not going to let that one fly. but you said the P word again, so we'll see if we get dumped again for a word that we say here all the time and don't think twice of. All right, let's take a break. Now I feel better. What will the Giants do with the sixth overall pick in the draft? We will dive into Joe Shane's latest comment and break down some other NFC East draft needs next here on PFT Live.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.